Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Mondrano. I'm joined today by my very good friend, Mr. Peter Marsh. You know him from his various YouTube endeavors, the Lassercast, where he talks about contemporary horror with his BFF horror buddy, Danny. And then he also is on Comic Books or Comics Transformed, which is about adaptations of comic book material, which is all media.
Yes, now. Pretty much.
And that's with Brian. And both of those YouTube channels, their videos are also available as podcasts. Pete, how are you?
Oh, dude, I'm great. I love being on your channel.
Well, I love you to be here because you always come with like nostalgia content.
Mm-hmm.
So today we are talking about the comic book Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: The Last Ronin, which you recommended to me.
Yes. So you hadn't read it before?
No.
Okay.
I've read it twice now.
Oh, nice, man. Nice. Yeah, I actually hadn't read it up until we decided to have this little session. And it's because Brian, my co-host on Comic Books Transformed, he was always raving about this. And I'm a really big fan of the IDW Ninja Turtles comics. Yeah. So this is like the creme de la creme for the IDW Ninja Turtles comics.
Yeah, like I had heard about this too, because it's a big thing. Like they just released a figure of the Last Ronin, which it kind of is cool. Because it's the Last Ronin design, but it looks like the old Playmate figures. Mm-hmm. It looks almost like you took your old Ninja Turtle figure and like did a custom on it. So since it was your first time and my first time, and we were just going about this based on its height, let's start right out of the gate with 1 out of 5 turtle shells. How many turtle shells would you give this?
Oh my God, I'd give it like 6 turtle shells, man. It's
would
so
you really?
Good.
Wow. Yes. I'm going to say 3 turtle shells. Because I liked it, and I especially liked it more the second time, but there are things, I have criticisms of it. There are things that I wish were a little different, that I think they could have gone further, but we'll talk about the things we like about it and the things we don't like about it. So, The Last Ronin is part of what's basically a genre now, based off of Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, which is taking a superhero and putting them in the far-flung future where things are dystopian and they are old and embittered, and what are they doing now? So you've got The Dark Knight Returns, you've got Old Man Logan, you've got Spider-Man Dark Reign, which actually, the last one reminded me a lot of Dark Reign.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically that. It's the future. It's very dystopian New York. It's not explained exactly how it got to be this dystopian, and it is run by Kylo Ren, whose grandfather was Shredder, and we start right away. We have the first issue, we have one turtle, and he's wearing a black bandana, so we don't immediately know who he is, and he's using all of the weapons we know, so we're kind of immediately like, okay, I can't tell from the indicators that I've always been given, the color of the bandana or the weapon.
Right.
And you see, you find out very, very early on that he is the last Ninja Turtle. The other 3 turtles have died and kind of follow him around, not as ghosts, but I think of more as like mental apparitions. Like it's more his memories fucking with him.
Right.
And I guess we'll go through the whole first issue, but they hold back the surprise to the very last page of the first issue that the turtle we are watching is actually Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you?
Yes. But the thing is, I kind of assumed it was going to be him. The obvious choice would be that it would be Raphael, right? Because throughout the whole comic, he's acting like Raphael. He talks like Raphael. You were talking about like the distinctive things that separate each turtle, right? And you said the weapons, you said the colors of their bandanas. I think even on the cartoon that we watched as kids, didn't their belt buckles even have like their letter of their name? But in this, like, if you look at the dialogue from the other turtles, it's always like off panel. It's coming from off panel. And then, or at least in the first issue, and you listen to the dialogue and you're like, okay, well, who's talking? Is that Leonardo talking? Is that Donatello? You can't really tell. Yeah. It's all very ambiguous, but the main guy seems like Raph. And then at the very end, the last word balloon is, oh, where have you been, Michelangelo? And you're like, oh shit, he's so bitter and old now.
It surprised me. I did think, okay, he's acting so much like Raph. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be Raph. But I really was thinking, okay, is it Leonardo or Donatello? And when it ends up being Michelangelo, I think that's a pretty clever twist, because if you know the Turtles, he was the party dude, Cowabunga. He was the most lighthearted one. He was the more comic relief one. He was the one who was always, he was never really ever angry. He mm-hmm. was always like the fun stoner of the four of them. And to have him, you know, looking after you see that it's Michelangelo, to look at like, oh, this guy who was like the fun one is now so embittered. I mean, he almost commits seppuku at the end of the first issue.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. It is, you know, it's funny because there's so many different versions of the Turtles, right? So many different movies at this point. There's different cartoon versions of the show.
Yeah.
And in all the different versions, pretty much every single version, Mikey's always like the youngest, most pure, fun turtle. And there never is really this like kind of dark turn for Mikey. IDW has had these Ninja Turtle comics for a long time now. They've actually had them since 2011. Wow. So, you know, we're going on like 12 years of IDW Ninja Turtle comics. And even in that book, you've had like Leonardo join the Foot Clan. Bad stuff has happened to Raphael. He was separated from the Turtles in the beginning of the series. Donatello, like, pretty much like died almost at one point, and you thought he was dead.
Didn't they add a fifth turtle, the yellow turtle?
Yes, yes. I wanted to eventually talk about her too. It's a girl. Yeah. And she has a yellow mask, and her name is
what? We're Jenny. Done here.
Yeah, right.
Is it Venus de Milo from The Next Mutation?
If only, man. It's not as cool as that. No, it's her name's Jenica, and she was like an assassin for the Foot Clan. She gets really hurt by Karai, who we're going to talk about her too at one point. And she gets a blood transfusion from Leonardo, and she becomes a turtle. That's where she comes from.
Yeah.
So, like, all this dark shit has happened in the comics, even in some of the cartoons. But Michelangelo is always the fun, innocent one.
Yeah. It's so funny that you say that, because there's two new Ninja Turtles movies coming out. One by Colin Jost and Casey Jost. Both, well, Colin Jost, you know, he does Weekend Update on SNL. Yeah. They're writing, I think, a live-action movie. But then Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, his partner, are doing an animated movie. And just this week, they released images from their movie, and their movie's going very lighthearted. Michelangelo actually has braces in the image that they released. So it's so funny, like, to see him with braces, and then he's like, I'm going to fucking kill myself. But that's what's interesting, right? We've talked on this channel about He-Man. We've talked a lot about nostalgia stuff, but we've also talked a lot about things like He-Man, Power Rangers, where there are multiple versions of it.
Yeah.
And I like a property like this where it's very malleable. I like that all these things exist. Like, a lot of people, a lot of Ninja Turtles fans really hated the Michael Bay movies. Mm-hmm. And I didn't. I mean, I didn't love them, but they were Ninja Turtle movies. I mean, I wasn't like offended. My childhood wasn't ruined.
Right.
I was like, okay, you know, the cool thing about Turtles is, similar to Power Rangers, is it reboots. It reboots every couple of years. Every time, like, you know, 6-year-olds become 10-year-olds, they're ready to get more 6-year-olds.
Right.
Or like, you know, 40-year-olds like us.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere. Yeah. No, I think actually we've even talked about this either on your show or on my show, but we've talked about the fact that, like, the Turtles themselves go through this reboot cycle often too. Turtles, Transformers, Ghostbusters a little bit too.
Yeah.
Where it is like every sort of like grade school round, you know, from kindergarten to fifth grade, and then you get a new batch of kids, right? The most recent one is that Rise of the Ninja Turtles show,
yeah,
which I like it. You like it?
It's very Teen Titans. It's very much just a comedy.
Right, right.
So you have to buy into that premise.
Yeah, my 6-year-old likes it a lot. My 6-year-old daughter. I like the Nickelodeon one that's on Netflix right now.
The one before that.
Yes, that one I think is the best of like the modern turtle cartoons. So I'm always wanting my daughter to watch that one. But a little side note, you mentioned Colin Jost or whatever the fuck. Yeah. I didn't even know that he was making a Ninja Turtles movie. That kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, were you friends with him? I don't know if he still did, but he lived on Staten Island and we knew him a little bit.
It just blows my mind. Cause yeah, he's like around our age. He lived on Staten Island. Now he owns like a fucking ferry with Pete Davidson, right? They turned it into a club, right? Yeah, yeah. So he's living his best life, man. And we're sitting here talking about Ninja Turtles. Well, he's making the fucking Ninja Turtles movie. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But going back to just the different versions, like they always keep certain things intact. And this last Ronin comic is like a different continuity than the IDW comic, too.
So is that true? Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. Because the IDW comic, I thought that maybe you would maybe get into it and be interested in it because they like really changed the hell out of the comic at one point. In the IDW comic, the one that's not the last Ronin, Splinter eventually dies. And there is this mutant called Hob, who's a cat, and he sends off a bomb that turns a bunch of people in Manhattan into mutants.
Okay.
And so they actually seal off Manhattan from the rest of the world, from the rest of New York. And you have this like mutant city, and the turtles essentially can just walk on the street now with all the other mutants and like hang out. Yeah. And they don't even wear their masks anymore. So it's like real hard to tell who's who.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. You know what one that people forget about? The CGI movie where like Sarah Michelle Gellar was the voice of April O'Neil. That was just like one and done movie.
I know.
That was a good one too.
It's just TMNT, right? For that movie? Yeah. That movie, I keep wanting to show that to my 6-year-old, but I'm scared she's going to be frightened by it and have nightmares because there's like monsters in it.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of a weird one.
Patrick Stewart is in it. He's like a warrior. That's like an ancient warrior. Yeah. And what's cool about that movie is that you don't have, the Shredder. You have Karai in it. And they kind of allude to the Shredder maybe being in a sequel, but then they don't end up making a sequel to it.
It's sort of like the Halloween Kills or the Halloween of the second Halloween of Ninja Turtles, because you can watch it as a part two to the original Ninja Turtles movie, like Ninja Turtles, and then forget the part two that they made with Vanilla Ice. Like this would be right after.
Yes. I kind of would like to forget that part two, The Secret of the Ooze.
It's so funny. As a kid, I absolutely loved it. But as an adult, it's so bad.
Yeah.
And three's pretty not great either.
No. So you are pretty much a big Turtles fan, huh?
Yeah, but I've only read a handful of the original Mirage comics.
Yes, like reprints, yes.
And this is, I think, the first IDW. Wait, did I read Meets Batman? Did they ever meet the Ghostbusters? Yes.
Yes, of course.
I read Ninja Turtles Meet Ghostbusters. This is what I do in my time. So that, I've read that, but I'm kind of not as knowledgeable, but I want to read more.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned the comics, the Mirage comics. I'm really glad you mentioned that because in a way, everything's come full circle, right? Because with the Turtles, the main inspiration for the Turtles was Daredevil. Eastman and Laird were big fans of Frank Miller, who was really big in the early 80s, and he had drawn Daredevil, and they went on to write for Daredevil as well, right? Yeah. And so the origin for the Ninja Turtles is pretty much the same origin as Daredevil's origin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you mentioned before The Dark Knight Returns, that's Frank Miller. He drew it and wrote it, right? And then also Frank Miller wrote another comic called Ronin, which is like this last Ronin, where there's like this sort of, you know, bustling futuristic city, but then there's also this underground, resistance. And it's about this like ninja figure too. So they definitely are still influenced by Frank Miller all these years later.
Yeah. Well, I have the hardcover trade, and it comes with an introduction by Robert Rodriguez.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And afterward by, Kevin Eastman.
Yeah.
And Kevin Eastman, he claims that even though this is like a new script, that way back in the beginning, him and Peter Laird actually wrote like a story like this of like, if we ever got to do that. And he said that that's not this, but that was the first draft that became this. Let me say, this is, it says story by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, and Tom Waltz, script by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz. Pencil and inks by Izu Escorza, Ben Bishop, Isaac Escorza, Kevin Eastman. Layouts by Kevin Eastman. Colors by Luis Antonio Delgado. Letters and design by Sean Lee. Color assistance by Samuel Platt. This is comic books, folks. Rhonda Pattinson. Cover art by the Escorzas. And it seems that Laird doesn't have much to do with it anymore.
No, no.
Did he sell it? I can't remember. Did they? They both sold it to Nickelodeon for like $1 zillion, right? But then, but then Eastman came back in, like as a hired gun, and I think Laird just doesn't do anything now.
I think you're 100% right. Have you ever watched those like the Toys That Made Us?
Yes. Shows?
Have you ever watched the Turtle
one? I cried like a baby when they did a reunion with them.
Oh yes. Well, didn't one of them buy like a fucking tank and stuff at one point?
Well, yeah, it's with, they're a weird couple because Peter Laird was always like older. He was like a grown ass man, and Kevin Eastman was like a young, like maybe in his 20s guy. Yeah. They actually have a cameo in this book in the subway. You see two guys that are meant to look exactly like them, and the last one goes by, and they're both eating pizza, and one is like, "Oh, was that? Ah, no, it can't be." And I was like, "It's Eastman and Laird."
Yeah.
And yeah, so they were weird. Couple and they disagreed on a lot of different shit. They sold it to Nickelodeon and both went in their own ways. And then I think Nickelodeon, or I don't know, I'm not sure how Eastman got back in, but he's all the way in now. And I don't know what Laird does at all.
I mean, they made a killing financially, so I don't think Laird needs to do anything.
Right.
But Eastman, it's cool because you can see his pencils in this book when they do flashbacks from Michelangelo. And then the other guy that you mentioned before, Waltz, he's one of the main writers that's been on the comic for IDW for years at this point.
Okay.
Eventually, once they reached issue 100, which that's a big accomplishment in comics when you reach issue 100, it means you've been around for like over a decade often, right? That's when a female writer took over. And that's when they had that big status change where, you know, the turtles are living above ground now. And her name is Sophie Campbell.
Mm.
So and her book really focuses on that Jenica character, too. Okay. So, yeah. But just going back to what you said with Eastman, at least, he's always been involved in the IDW comic, like writing backstories and things like that. And he usually does like variant covers for the book, too, which is something my collectors are really into. But that makes a lot of sense that they always had this kind of idea for a story. Like when you hear the ideas that they had for the comics when they were still making the Ninja Turtles comics, some of that shit was really far out. Like, did you ever watch the Half in the Bag where they talked to the artist that was on that Ninja Turtles comic?
No, I never have.
Okay. Yeah, he's talked to Eastman and Laird, and he was talking about some of the weird shit that they would put into the comic, the Mirage comic from back in the day. Okay, here's one thing. Like, did you know that in the Mirage comic, they just, like, killed the fucking Shredder, like, in the first issue?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like the movie, right? The movie that when we were kids. But then they bring him back by, like, having his remains get eaten by like crabs or some kind of fucking, it's all kinds of weird shit. And I probably sound like a lunatic to your listeners, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is that this is a brand. This is a franchise that is just so weird. And it's just so interesting that it connects with so many people. And you know, you and I are talking about it. We're like, I'm 40. You're like what? Like almost
39. 40, right?
Yeah. And we're talking about this fucking serious version of this, you know? It's weird.
Interesting. Well, I think one thing that people forget that's been lost is I think the very beginning, it was very satirical.
There's
not necessarily comedy, but there's silliness built into the concept, which I think, you know, then the cartoon happened and that was sort of sincere in a way. And, you know, I love the first movie a lot. I still love it. But I think people, like you're saying about the weirdness of the original comics, I mean, supposedly this whole thing started by just as like a bit, as like a joke. I forget which one of them drew it and just drew a turtle as a ninja. And I was just like, look, it's a Ninja Turtle. And they just liked the idea. And they're right. Like, let's make a whole issue on just this one idea. And they kill Shredder because they didn't think they'd do more.
Right.
And they called it Mirage because it was just their apartment. Like, the joke was, it doesn't really exist. So right. They're like, oh, Mirage Studios.
Yeah. And it was like one of the biggest independent comic book companies ever. You know, like Mirage has made this big, huge hit, you know, with that comic. They just were so shocked that people were into it, you know. And then the original movie is an independent movie as well. And that's a huge hit too, you know, from Miramax, I think, right? Made the first one. Yeah. So it is this weird concept, you know. Going back to the Frank Miller stuff and Daredevil, you know, Daredevil's origin is that Matt Murdock, this kid, pushes a blind man out of the way of a truck that's going to hit him. And a vial of the ooze, well, it's not the ooze in Marvel Comics, but this chemical comes off and hits him in the head. And that's where he gets his Daredevil powers, right? And with the Ninja Turtles comics, the same shit happens. The kid pushes the blind man, but the ooze hits the kid's pet turtle bowl, and the turtles go into the sewer and become the Ninja Turtles. So it's like it's taken right out of Frank Miller's stuff, and now it's come full circle, like I said before.
This takes a lot of shit from Frank Miller.
No, truly.
Like a tank. There's a tank in this that's like, come on, guys.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I wanted to get to that because I was wondering if we were going to go like in chronological order or not, but like the tank is the fucking Batman tank from The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that, like, even the Robin that's in Dark Knight Returns, Carrie Kelly, the female Robin, like, that's just like Casey in this book.
Yes, too. That's right. Right. Yeah. It's very. So, we will go through, but I do want to run through the story. It begins with Michelangelo, the Last Ronin. I guess it's the Hudson River. He's swimming into the city. He gets into the city and it's like big wall around the city, and it's very like Escape from New York kind of.
Yes.
And it's all run by Hiroto, who's the crime boss, and he is the daughter. Well, he's the grandson, who I don't know that well because I didn't read the IDW comics, but his mother took over as well, right? After Shredder.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Karai. She is the Shredder's daughter in this book. Sometimes she's the Shredder's granddaughter. They just play around with it. She's in that TMNT movie. She's in the Nickelodeon cartoon, too. So Karai is around a lot. I think she's even in that Rise of the Ninja Turtles cartoon as well.
But then I don't know why I didn't remember.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I might be wrong. I don't even know if Shredder's in that Rise of the Turtles cartoon.
I didn't see it yet, but he's in the movie that Netflix made. End movie.
Yeah. So, Karai is his daughter in this comic, and then his grandson is Hiroto. And they basically have had this, like, ongoing feud, the two clans.
Yeah.
The Turtle clans are the Hamato clan, and then the Oroku is the Shredder clan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know that like, I guess in Japanese culture, at least in like ninja culture, they do the last name first and then the first name last?
Yeah. I think I've read that in other things.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware. I don't know what continuity this follows, but I wasn't aware that like it was more than just Splinter and Shredder. Like in this comic, it's like a blood feud between these two clans that goes back a long way. Mm-hmm. That started in Japan, which was something I wasn't aware of.
In the IDW comics, the continuity that's been going on for a long time now, the way they play it out is that Splinter had four sons in like feudal Japan, and there was the Foot Clan. Splinter was a member of the Foot Clan with his sons, and then Shredder basically betrayed them. They separated from Shredder, and then Shredder came and murdered their mother and then the four sons and then killed Splinter, and their like reincarnated spirits are in the turtles. That's all.
So I got a couple of criticism.
Okay. Uh, okay.
I don't like Hiroto. First of all, he looks like Kylo Ren. It looks like they based his image on Adam Driver.
Yeah.
And I feel like other than he's a big, scary, bad guy, I feel like I don't understand him or know anything about him. A few times he's like, I'm God. And it's like, okay, what? You like crows? Like, I don't know what. I feel like I wish I knew more about you. That's actually what my biggest criticism of everything in this comic is. I wish there was more. I wish there were more issues. I wish I knew more about the villain. I wish I knew more about that world. I wish it was more violent. I wish it was more funny. I wish it was more sci-fi. Like, I just wish it was more of any of these things. Because I feel like the concept that we're talking about is so radical and cool. And the book itself doesn't totally live up to that cool a concept.
Yeah, I think that is really well put. I think Hiroto might be the perfect example of that, too. Because he is just sort of like this badass, egomaniacal villain.
Yeah.
But then that's it, right?
Like, why?
You don't really know his motivation, you know? Right.
Does New York become... He seems like the official leader of New York. So how is the leader of a crime organization the actual leader of a city? Like, how does that happen? Now, I know that they just started another Last Ronin comic, which I think fills in some of Mikey's backstory on his, like, Batman journey.
So
I guess they were holding things back, but I do wish... I feel like this could have gone on... This could have been richer.
Yes, absolutely. Each issue is extra long, too. But, they don't really explain why. There's little things that they drop in as you go through each issue. Like, they talk about how the reason why there's walls around New York City is because the ocean was rising, like, because of climate change.
Yeah.
So, maybe the implication is that, like, the water has risen around the Earth, and so there's only a few, like, safe cities, and maybe New York is one of them, and, you know, maybe he's in charge because he's like a tyrant that controls the city. They mentioned something along the lines, because there's like a news clip at one point where they're talking about how like crime lords were trying to take over the city when they were putting up those walls. Because what's interesting about this book is that it jumps around in time. It'll be in this like bleak future, but then it'll jump back to when the turtles essentially all fall. Right. Yeah. And so we kind of see, and that's sort of like during Hiroto's rise to power.
The whole first issue is basically just Mikey is trying to infiltrate the tower that he lives in, high above the city. He meets April O'Neil's daughter,
right?
Casey Marie Jones, daughter of Casey Jones and April. And he fails. He gets all the way to the top, and then like a giant Mauser, because the bad guy uses Baxter Stockman technology. So a giant Mauser like throws him out a window, and he's like, "Oh fuck, I failed." And he falls, and he feels like he should die, but he doesn't die.
Right.
Which starts another thread that I thought they could have done more with. The fact that they say he's continuing to mutate. That's why he's stronger even now as he's old.
Right. Right. I agree. I was wondering why, like, he got stronger as he got older. One theory I had just for myself, my headcanon, was that, like, all the other turtles died, and essentially, like, he took on their strength.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing like that's ever stated. It's just that he had a secondary mutation.
Right.
Which, that's, like, a thing, because, you know, we always talk about mutants with turtles, right? But, obviously, the first example is X-Men, right?
Right.
And with X-Men, they had this concept of like secondary mutations too, where like their powers would advance. And so that seems to happen in this book too. But I think it's just kind of essentially like a plot device to explain like why he's alive and the rest are dead.
And I got, again, I some of them go out like punks. I mean,
that's just true.
Like, remember, like, you and I saw episode 3 together. Remember, like, the way the Jedi were just getting murdered by the clones? And we were like, this is ridiculous. Like, I think Raphael's death is really cool.
Yeah.
But Splinter and Donatello's death is ridiculous. First of all, it's the most obvious trap ambush that there's ever been. They know it's a trap. And then but they still just walk right into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they die by arrows. It sucks. Mm-hmm.
yeah it's pretty brutal. There's this one sequence, and we're jumping ahead to like I think issue 3 here or 4 even, but like they show this ambush that happens in Japan, and Splinter and Donatello go there, and they meet these envoys from the Shredder Clan or whatever, the Foot Clan, Splinter just like slices three of their heads off in one shot. Did you
that
see
was
that?
Cool. Yeah, yeah, that was cool. What I wish, see, it's it jumps all over, so it's okay if we jump all over.
Of course.
At that point, Casey Jones and Leonardo are dead, but Donatello and Splinter don't know that.
Right.
And Mikey, no one knows Mikey's alive, and he's like going to Japan to try to meet Splinter and or to try to warn Splinter and Donatello. Yeah.
Right, right.
And but the thing is, Hiroto ends up showing up there. It's like a fake truce talk, like a peace talk. And Hiroto shows up dressed in like this cool, like old fashioned, like samurai garb.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, Splinter and Hiroto are going to have this epic fucking battle.
Yeah.
And no, like he just goes, you know, Splinter says, like, don't be a coward, come and fight me. And then he's like, no, he just has his troops like fire arrows at them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And Donatello, I think, jumps in front of him, and they both just die.
They both just get, yeah, that part, it was kind of weird, too, because I was like, all right, essentially, they're just setting them up for, they just lied to them the whole time, right? And that's even the second time that happens in the book, right? Because the the first time it happens, Karai, the Shredder's daughter, wants them to meet for peace talks, and she ambushes them, too.
Right, right? Yeah.
That's the one with Raphael and
It's like Thanksgiving and they come in and they're like, oh, we got ambushed.
Right. Yeah. So Raphael's death is like way earlier than the remaining turtles and Splinter's death. And
it's cool. Like,
his death is cool. It's the most fitting. It's like what you would expect from Raphael.
Yes.
We've even kind of seen things like this
in
other movies, you know, like in that first Ninja Turtles live action movie, there's that sequence where he's like getting beaten up by the Foot Clan.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds you of that. Kind of even reminds you of like when he's trying to get Kino into the Foot Clan in the second Ninja Turtles
and he
infiltrates, right? He's always kind of going off on his own.
Yeah.
And he ultimately pays the price for it.
Right.
But
it's cool because it's like he just recklessly goes off on his own for revenge and cries there and like 100 or more Foot Clan.
Yeah.
And he just kind of jumps into them and starts murdering them pretty, but they overpower him.
Yeah.
And then he's fighting Cry and they go, they both like fall into like the river.
Right.
And she like brutally like Wolverine, like takes like a knife and like puts it up under his chin and kills him. And I guess this is where she goes into a coma, which is where she is when we see her in the future. So they both kind of like fall in that scene.
Eliminate each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really well done because the panels that show him fighting the Foot Clan are really cool because he's just like surrounded by them. It's almost like he's like floating above them, just stabbing him with his size. And then when he kills her, there's no dialogue. There's nothing. It's just images. And he just kind of goes down into the water and then his side kind of is just floating in the water. It's really well done. It's one of the highlights of the book. But it's just this kind of cycle that they go through where they keep trying to make peace with the Foot Clan and the Foot Clan betrays them and murders some of them. There's that last stand where Leo and Casey Jones get taken out. And by then we've kind of leapt towards this sort of like cyberpunky kind of future. You know,
that's another thing that repeats twice in the story. There is a siege on Baxter Stockwell's compound. Like they do that twice. The first time is the time that Leonardo and Casey die and April, she gets her arm and leg shot off.
We'll get to
April. She's basically like Linda Hamilton in this. She's just like all of a sudden she's a scientist all of a sudden. She's a badass.
Yeah.
And then they basically the exact same plan at the end with Mikey and April's daughter, who's like his apprentice at this point. And it's almost the same plan. It's to bring, I'm not that familiar with this character, Honeycutt, like the robot, to use him to shut down all the, it's the same plan twice.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about Honeycutt for a second. When you were a kid, did you ever have the Fugitoid toy?
I might have.
There's so many fucking like bullshit toys from the turtles. Yeah. There's like that bull and there's the guy that's like made out of pizza, right?
Yeah.
There's all these weird ass toys. Fugitoid is just basically like this robot, right? He is in the comics. You know how in the cartoon Krang comes from Dimension X,
yeah.
and he has those rock soldiers, and he has the neutrinos that are like fighting against him. He's like a neutrino scientist who is like badly hurt, and then he like uploads his consciousness into a robot.
Okay. Okay.
That's what he is in this comic too.
Okay.
But yeah, he does this sort of like, you know, self-sacrifice thing where he blows up when Baxter Stockman sends a whole bunch of Mausers against Leo and Casey Jones, and they have this, you know, big epic final battle, and then, you know, everyone just gets blown up when he does that. But yeah, if you want to talk about April, I actually have a lot to say about that too.
By the way, I just noticed over my left shoulder are the Ninja Turtles, the figures back there. I don't know if you see that.
That is awesome, yeah.
So we were going to talk about April O'Neil.
Yeah, so you mentioned, you're like, oh, April's a scientist now, right? The thing is, April has been like different things in different shows and comics, right? In the original cartoon, we know her as a news reporter. I think before that, she wasn't even a news reporter, like in the comic. I can't remember what her actual job was, but I remember they changed it for the cartoon. And then
whitewashed her. I think in the first issue, she's black because she's based on Eastman's girlfriend who was black.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. She definitely looks different in the original. So yeah.
It's whiter.
Yeah.
But we should say the original issues are in black and white.
Right. So, you know, in the IDW comics, the one that I keep referring to, she actually is a scientist, and she's at one point like working with Baxter Stockman as like an intern for him. So yeah. And then in that Nickelodeon cartoon, she's kind of like a little scientist in training. Her dad gets kidnapped in the Nickelodeon cartoon, and he's a scientist.
That's interesting.
So April often is either like a reporter or a scientist.
Well, you know, in Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, she's black again. But she's also like a kid in that. She's completely different. She's called April O'Neil, but she's like a child.
Right.
Very interesting. Yeah.
She's probably the most malleable out of all the characters, I think.
She's like Barbie in that she's had a million different jobs. Like, I'm a doctor. I'm a runway model. I'm a reporter.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite version of April?
Well, when I was a kid, I had a crush on both the one from the first movie and the second movie. But you know what? I just recently played the arcade game again.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the version of, there's like a live action picture of April on the side of that. And she just looks exactly like the comic, but like with like a bad wig. And somehow that's burned into my head as that's April O'Neil.
Yes. I know exactly which image you're talking about too. Yeah. So in this, April, she gets blown up, right? We were talking about that last stand with the Mausers and Casey Jones and Leonardo, and she gets blown up, but she loses her leg. She loses her arm. She is saved, and she finds out after she's been blown up that she is pregnant.
Yeah.
And also, I should point out that Thanksgiving dinner that you mentioned, like Casey and April are kind of old when she finds out she's pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're also going to announce their engagement.
Right.
They
allude to the fact that like it's been 16 years since the Turtles died. Mm. But I'm guessing that like that when the Turtles died, like April must have been like at least like 40 or 40 something.
Yeah. Because even the flashbacks, I don't think are that long ago. Mm-mm. Like it's not like they're. Well, I really like there's a part where April's daughter wants to fight. And Michelangelo's like, nah, you can't. And he's having an argument with the apparitions of his brothers. And Michelangelo's like, she's only 16. And they're like, so what? We were only 16. Like, exactly. What does that matter?
Right. Well, I figured that since you're talking about that, we should get on with the controversial thing about her daughter, too. Which kind of ties in with, you mentioned Spider-Man Reign before.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, right. We find out that in that comic, Aunt May and Mary Jane both die of, it's more dark, they die of cancer because exposure to Peter gives them cancer because he's radioactive.
Right.
Yeah, in this, what happens?
In this, the idea is that Casey Marie, the daughter, has kind of like mutant powers because her parents were both exposed to the turtles so much.
Yeah.
So she has like kind of super strength. I think she kind of has some like invulnerability too.
Yeah, but it's not that clear. They say she's fast and they say she's strong, but you don't really see any. It's told to you. Right. You don't see anything that makes you think she's these things, because in fact, there's a great scene where Michelangelo's like, all right, fight me. Go ahead and take me out. And she like screams and runs at him. And he's like, oh, I'm glad you screamed. Otherwise, I really would have been taken off guard.
Right, and
he basically just kicks, he basically, it's like in The Last Jedi when Luke, which is a scene I love, where Rey attacks Luke and Luke doesn't even defend himself. He just moves out of the way of the lightsaber.
Yeah.
It's like that. Like he's just showing how bad she is. So, yes. But then right after that, he's like, yeah, she's a mutant. I'm like, what? How do we know that? She was just, you just kicked her ass all over the place.
Yeah. Is there any discussion we can ever have where you don't reference The Last Jedi?
I'm sorry, I know. It's not possible.
I mean, we're talking about Ninja Turtles. It's okay. I actually was going to reference The Last Jedi before because, like, you know, there's the whole subversion of expectations. That's like what everyone says about Rian Johnson. And I feel like the Michelangelo thing is like a subversion of expectations too.
Sure, yeah, yeah. But, right.
Yeah, but she's an interesting character. One of the design choices they make for her is by, like, I think the fourth issue, before she cuts her hair, she's wearing like this helmet or like this sort of pilot's cap that has goggles on it.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so you look like you, so that looks like Dr. Aphra.
Yeah. It looks like Dr. Aphra.
Yeah. So I don't know, a Star Wars character,
a comic book Star Wars character.
Right, right. That's a character. If they have a toy of her, I'd like to get a toy of her.
I got it right here. Wait. Is it in arm's distance?
Holy shit.
Shit. No, I have it though. I don't have it up anymore. Yeah, they did make a toy of her. It was pretty cool.
Do you like live in like Mecca? You just like, live in like the coolest place. It's like a wonderland over there, man.
This is my parents' basement.
Oh, that's hot.
It's very hot. Filled with toys. But I also work from here too, because I work from home. So this is also my workspace. So I'll be like doing a business meeting, and like it's the same background you're seeing now.
Oh man, that is awesome.
It works.
Yes. That's the beauty of podcasts, right? People can't see what we're doing. I'm actually in my daughter's bedroom recording. Yes,
it's very pink.
Yes, yes. but we're going on a tangent. So we were saying about April, I think, and
the daughter.
The daughter, right.
Yeah.
So the daughter is in charge of like these, like the resistance fighters, and they call them strikers. One thing, like, is you keep talking about how you wish there was more, or they sort of elaborate more on things. There's this whole like class element that they introduce into this that they don't really explore too much. They kind of talk about how there's like different levels of society, and it's like literal levels.
Yeah.
Like the striker people are like underground, literally.
Right, right. And they call that their level is called the bottom, but they call themselves the rock bottoms.
Right, right.
And one of her friends looks exactly like one of the mutants from Dark Knight Returns. He's got like
the Cyclops
visor.
Yeah.
I love homages and fan service as much as the next guy, but some of it in this comic, I was like, come on. Like,
yeah, yeah.
This is more than homage. This is just you're just taking.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what I felt like with Hiroto too. Like, you know, he has all those crows around him.
I don't know why that's funny.
The Ninja Turtles, like the comic part of Ninja Turtles, it was like truly in its prime in the early 80s, maybe even going into the 90s, right?
Yeah.
And he feels like he's from that time. And the whole aesthetic of the whole comic feels like it's from that time.
Yeah, very 90s, right? So you say you think he's influenced by The Crow?
Yeah, yeah, I was kind of thinking that. Yeah, he's got the long hair like The Crow. He's kind of running around on rooftops without shoes on and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
It's true. It's true.
And he, you know, he is kind of crazy too. At one point, he initiates martial law and basically shuts down the whole island of Manhattan just trying to find Michelangelo. He's also turned like his Foot Clan soldiers into like cyborgs too.
They're like Cybermen now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And RoboCops.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, so then if you want to bring up RoboCop, there is also kind of like a Terminator aspect to his like final form too.
Right. If basically in the end, when the big fight between Michelangelo and Hiroto has kind of his own Shredder outfit.
Right.
But
right.
If you imagine the original Shredder is like Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator, and Hiroto's outfit is like the one from the second movie that's like liquid.
It's 1000.
Like, right, exactly. So he's like, it's like the Shredder outfit, but it's liquid and he can make things move. And so it's like, yeah, it's very much that.
It's really cool. And, you know, the whole sequence, Michelangelo is trying to find a weak spot so he can get to him. And he seems invincible, you know, and there's this crazy action throughout that whole sequence where they're just sort of falling off this giant tower that he has, and they make it all the way to like the sewers, I think, point too. He's I guess intimidating in that form, but otherwise he just does kind of seem like Kylo Ren, this sort of like petulant child. Right, he kills his own mother too at one point,
which is very weird.
Yeah. I don't think we mentioned this, but Karai is essentially like in this like tube throughout the whole comic, and she's in a coma. And at the very end, Hiroto just like smashes his claw through and kills her.
Yeah, he's like, I never loved her. It's like, then why have you been monologuing to her this whole time?
Yeah.
Because I think Michelangelo says something like, she at least had honor or something like that.
Yeah.
I wish I knew more about who he was, what he wanted. You do get a little bit of weird, like mutant racism, like a little bit of like he calls them monsters, and he's like he like refers to them as like subhuman, and that's kind of something, but none of it ever goes that far.
Yeah, they do a lot more with that in the regular continuity, like dealing with the idea of like mutants and like humans and how they interact with each other. That's a big thing. Like, do you remember when we were kids? They even had like these characters called the Mutanimal. I can't even say it. Mutimals or Mutanimals. Yeah. They even had their own comic. They're like a big part of the IDW comic, and like they have like characters like Mondo Gecko. Uh-huh. Remember those guys from the toys? Yeah. And like that fucking Manta Ray one.
Yes.
So that's like a big deal in the IDW comics, is like the humans and mutants kind of working together or against each other. You know?
Does this character exist anywhere else besides this book?
Hiroto? I haven't seen him anywhere, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so, okay.
But, you know, there's one thing I wanted to bring up, too, and, I mean, you know, obviously keep going with what you got, but, like, I just wanted to not forget this part, but you mentioned, like, Old Man Logan, and you mentioned Dark Knight Returns. With Old Man Logan for Marvel, they actually have, like, a whole series now called The Wastelands, and there's, like, a Old Man Hawkeye, and there's like, you know, old woman Harley, not Harley Quinn, Captain Marvel. Uh-huh. And then DC does actually have like an old woman Harley or whatever too.
Okay.
So it's a genre unto itself, like you said at the very beginning of the episode. But what I find interesting about these stories is that you always have in comic books that kind of the same thing just happening over and over again, this cycle, right? Where the heroes look like they're down, but then they come back and nobody really like truly stays dead, right? Mm-hmm. Then once you get to this particular genre, it's like, oh, something's changed. Now everyone really is dead and it's this bleak future. And usually there's this sort of catalyst event. Like for Old Man Logan in the comics, the villains all decide to team up together and fight each other's heroes to kind of overpower them. In this, the main thing is that the Foot Clan essentially, like, you know, just betrays the Turtles and sets them up, you know. But there's always that one thing that, like, kind of takes it too far and pushes it.
Right. I mean, like, there are flying cars in the city. Like, I wanted to be like, are the people at the top, like, rich? Like, what is the, you know, is it like a ziggurat? Is it, you know what I mean? Like, is there like a Marxist thing going on here? Like, I just wanted more. Because in some scenes, it looks like the Dark Knight Rises. Sorry, the Dark Knight Returns. And then in some scenes, it looks like Coruscant from Star Wars.
Right.
Like, then in some scenes, it looks like New York from Escape from New York. And it's kind of like, what is that? Like, how did this happen to this major city? I don't know. I wanted more from it.
I had vibes of like Akira, and then also like, Marvel had comics in the early 90s called 2099. That was like the time period.
Yeah.
And the flying cars and stuff kind of reminded me of that too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like you said, it would benefit from like just being this ongoing book and kind of learning more about the world. But I think for the tale of like this one turtle who had to watch his brothers die, it's, you know, it's very effective, at least on that level.
Yeah. I mean, I do like it. And the second time I read it, I got more out of it and I sort of was enjoying it more. I like the artwork a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I like the look, the design of The Last Ronin. It's, you know, it's, he's wearing like an overcoat, like he's all dark. It's like a dark overcoat with a hood And then the same bandana, like they always wore, but it's black.
Yeah.
And then on his back, he has all of their weapons.
Yep.
And there's a cool thing he does at the end when he's fighting Hiroto. He keeps using their weapons and he'll say, yep, like, this is for Donatello. This is for Leonardo, as he uses their weapons against him. And that was, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was going to be like, and this is for Splinter at the end, but I don't think he does. Right. He does the three brothers.
Yeah, he does the four brothers. But throughout it, he has Splinter's, like, journal.
Yes, yeah.
And he gives it to little Casey Jones. But what do you think about this? The last page of the journal, it says, no peace.
Right.
Which I was like, wait, did Splinter write that? But then you see he, like, writes something in it, and then at the end, he gives it to her, and it says, no peace. K-N-O-W, peace.
Ah,
so he added the K and the W.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's something. I'm not sure what it is, but...
he had a breakthrough.
Yeah. It's deep.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think that he probably wrote no peace at the end of the book, you know, and he was just going through some tough shit. It's weird. There's this whole part of the book where, like, Michelangelo is just living in the woods. You know, like in a mountain.
He's like trying to die. He says, like, he lied down at the top of a mountain to die, but his mutant powers would not let him die.
Yeah. Pretty bleak.
I mean, for the one who, like, in the opening of the original cartoon, he's the one who, like, the dance floor, like, spinning on his shell.
Right.
Like, oh, he's a party dude. And, like, he's like, and this, he's like multiple times trying to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the finale too, like essentially the epilogue, right? Because Michelangelo does die. He fights Hiroto and he dies in the process. It's this big drawn out fight.
Yeah.
So does
Hiroto. He does kill him.
Right. Yeah. When Michelangelo dies, there's this sequence that is kind of looks like sort of the Lord of the Rings when Frodo wakes up.
Right.
Everybody's there.
Like, yeah, it's like, looks like heaven. Is it like heaven, or is it like a memory that he's having before he dies? He wakes up. Yeah, it's right. It's a lot like Lord of the Rings because he's in bed and then the brothers are around him. And it feels more like Ninja Turtles, like they're making fart jokes and like being more like kids. And then they go up on the roof and you've got Casey Jones and Splinter, which made me think, is this heaven? Because those are the dead ones. Like April's not there.
Right.
But it's kind of like he found some kind of peace, because we haven't said, like, throughout the whole thing, he's like, oh, my head is so fuzzy, I can't remember things. Like, something's breaking down in him. He kind of has a heart attack in the beginning. Like, when he's about to do seppuku, Casey comes in and sees him, and he's like, and he holds his chest and he says, like, not like this.
Right.
And then he wakes up, like, with an IV in, like, the lair, and April's taking care of him. So it's like, I'm not sure what it means, like if it's emotional or if it's the mutant gen is killing him, but he's like kind of suffering throughout the whole thing, which is again a lot like Batman, like the way, like, he's in the Dark Knight Returns, he's like always like a minute away from a heart attack.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Bruce actually does have a heart attack in the Dark Knight Returns at the very end when he's fighting Superman, and I think they show like a heart rate monitor, and like flat lines, and that happens in this comic too twice.
Oh, there's a couple of images in this that are direct lifts from The Dark Knight Returns.
Right,
so you can't see this because it's a podcast, but the silhouette of him in the sky.
And right.
Another one that is, I looked, I was like, this is exactly right from it.
Yeah.
Where the hell is it?
While you're looking, I'll say another one that I think you're not talking about. But like when he's fighting Hiroto, it is like when he's fighting Batman's fighting the head of the mutants, because they're fighting in the mud, and he fights Hiroto in the mud at the very end of their battle too.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
No, whatever. I can't find it.
Okay.
Yeah, there are some straight up, you know. Huh. Well, what do you think about? We said it's like a genre, but maybe that's generous, because basically Frank Miller did it with Batman and it was really successful,
right,
and it really fits with Batman.
Yes.
And then we've tried it a bunch of different times, and I think Old Man Logan's good. Do you think this is the kind of thing that we should do more of, or do you think that there are limitations here that we have to accept?
Yes, I do think so. So I would say it's I might have called it a genre before, but I'd say it's a subgenre, right? Because it's like a subgenre of comic books. But what I would say is I've seen like gritty videos of like Ninja Turtle fighting, right? And I've seen like that one fan film of the Power Rangers that we've referenced before. It's like real gritty, right?
Yeah.
I don't think this works for Power Rangers, for example, because with Ninja Turtles, it works because it already is built around Frank Miller, right? It's already built around Frank Miller's imagery to make the Ninja Turtles themselves, right? And the comics themselves were gritty to begin with. And so now it's just come full circle. Whereas if it's something like goofy, like Power Rangers, it's just not, it just doesn't seem genuine. It's weird because like so many guys around our age, they always want like the dark version of something, like, oh, I want like a really dark Star Wars. Like, give me a rated R Star Wars. Sounds so fucking unappealing.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's supposed to be like fun kid stuff.
Exactly.
It can get a little dark, but like, Jesus, I don't want a rated R Star Wars. And so I feel like there's just stuff you can't apply this to. There actually is, IDW had the rights for the Transformers even longer than they did Ninja Turtles.
Mm.
And they did this with Transformers too. They made a book called, I believe it's called The Last Bot Standing. And I don't know if you're familiar with like the cartoon or like the cartoon movie, but you know, Hot Rod?
No. Yeah.
Okay, well, Hot Rod is like the equivalent of Michelangelo in that book. So, but like with Transformers, that works too, because like the cartoon movie is so violent. And then like the comic books themselves are very violent. So I think that like it works as long as the capacity for darkness existed in the source material.
Right. And and Turtles always, the comics at least, always had real violence at least. And some grittiness and some darkness.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like lately it's been trending the other way, right? Like you had the Michael Bay movies, which weren't dark, but they were like very like testosterone. And then you have Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is like a lot like Teen Titans. And then you've got, I don't know what the Casey Jost one's gonna be like, but the Seth Rogen one, you know, he usually makes comedies. And he said, like, I don't think that they, he said with his film, they're going to really act like teenagers. And he hired teenagers to do the voice. So it seems like they're going for younger and they're going for more fun. It seems to me like it is malleable, but Ninja Turtle seems more comfortable in a more lighthearted way. I think you could still do this story, this exact story, The Last Ronin, but add a little bit more of a, not silliness, but a little bit more wackiness. You know what I mean? Make it just like more insane.
Yeah.
Make it more weird. So like it would have a little bit more, I guess, satire baked into it, and I think it would work more.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool if like Bebop and Rocksteady were still alive or something. And
right. Do something crazy.
They were doing like infomercials or something, and then they had to come back to hunt Michelangelo. Yeah.
Or like it, you know, do the Frank Miller thing, like, you know, the there's a religion that worships Shredder or something like that. You know what I mean? Like something crazy like that.
Yeah. Or like worships Krang or something. That'd be kind of cool.
Yes. That would be awesome, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that this would work as a movie?
An animated movie. I don't think anyone would take this serious if it was a live action movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. What do you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think someone like, well, I don't like him, but somebody like, Zack Snyder could probably try it. I don't know if it would work though. I don't know. My own question is interesting to me. I'm not sure.
Well, you know what's funny?
Yeah.
Is that you said that Robert Rodriguez did the intro to this book, right?
Yeah.
I think he actually could maybe do a live action version of it if anybody could.
Well, he did a great job with Boba Fett.
But I was just like, because I was actually looking at some imagery from Sin City, and that's Frank Miller, right? Yes. So, you know,
yeah. No, he could do. Well, that's the thing, though. In at least in animated form, it seems to be a Nickelodeon thing, right? So I feel like if it were animated, you would have to cut it down a little bit. Like maybe it would work better as an anime or like a live action movie. That's not marketed towards children.
Yes.
Because look, if you given me The Last Ronin when I was like 10, I would have cried and hated it. Right? I would have been like, what, the turtles are dead? Like, I would have not understood it. It would have not been cool to me.
Yeah.
I would have been like, why aren't they breakdancing or eating pizza? No one eats pizza once in this whole thing. There's so much more suicide attempts than the typical episode of Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. There's a 200% increase in suicide attempts in this book. No, you know, I think anime, that's actually a brilliant idea to go that way. You know, we keep kind of talking about this connective tissue of Frank Miller, and we talk about how he, you know, did The Dark Knight Returns, and this takes so much from that. They've adapted The Dark Knight Returns into an animated movie.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be successful. And then they also, they made an animated version of the Ninja Turtles and Batman comic, and it was actually pretty violent. Like, I haven't seen that.
Was that good?
I didn't finish watching it. I showed it to my daughter, and there's a scene where the Shredder fights Batman in like the first, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. And like Batman like coughs up blood at one point because the Shredder's beating his ass. So I stopped watching it, but like that kind of animation, I think, would work with this.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, there was a Batman anime movie a couple of years ago where like Batman had some kind of weird trippy dream. Like he was like a ninja or something like that.
Yes.
I think it's called like Batman Ninja or something like that. And
that was good. Yeah.
So that could work for this too, I think.
Yes. That was good. It could, like maybe like a release, like a non-theatrical release of just like an animated film. Exactly. Like not aimed at kids.
Right. Exactly.
You'd have to let Nickelodeon. Well, I'm not sure how the rights work out. Like, I know IDW makes the comics, but somewhere in this book, you see a credit of Nickelodeon. So I think they own it outright.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
So Nickelodeon would have to get on board with it.
Yeah. I think they are. I mean, that Batman and Ninja Turtles cartoon was pretty violent, you know?
Yeah. Do they fight each other?
Yeah. It's like typical thing where it's like, who are you? And they fight each other and then they team up to take on like the Penguin and the Shredder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever see Turtles Forever?
No, that's the one where it's like all the different versions.
It's a multiverse, right?
Yeah.
And it was the multiverse before the multiverse was cool.
Yeah.
This was years ago. It was, I think it was officially the end of that Nickelodeon show that you said you liked.
Yeah.
But basically, like, the multiverse opens up and there's like the 80s version, the comic version, like all of these different versions. It would be cool to do that again because there's been so much since then. Like the Michael Bay version. And what's interesting is even though all these versions are different, little things will stick. Like if something works, it'll stick.
Yes.
Like I think Michael Bay was the one who gave Donatello goggles, but I feel like he has goggles now in different versions.
He does.
So something, you know, some things have worked. I had one final thing I wanted to ask you. I forget. Oh, I remember. I wanted to ask you.
Go ahead.
So it ends with this epilogue where you see Casey and April, they're living in the sewer. And you know, I guess they won the day. And you see the very last panel is she's like, oh, are you hungry? And April is like, no, I'm not. And she's like, oh, I'm not talking to you. And then you see she has in this little like terrarium four turtles.
Yeah.
If you look, there's like ooze, like it's like an experiment. There's ooze being put into it.
Right.
And she says, I can't wait for you to grow up because I've got so much to teach you.
Yeah.
Implying that they're making new Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, did you like that ending? And would you like to see more of that?
I'm okay with that ending. I actually kind of would have liked it if it just ended without the epilogue at all. Like if it just ended with the heaven part. But once again, it's taking directly from The Dark Knight Returns, right? Because that ends with this epilogue where like Bruce is now leading these like mutant kids and Casey on like a little adventure after his battle with Superman. But no, I'm okay with that. I mean, if they're going to have another comic of this, like if they've started a new series of it, it'd be good to have like actual mutant turtles, because essentially I don't think there's any mutants left after the last Ronin.
Right.
So it's just kind of a way to like reboot it, you know?
Yeah, I think it would be a way to explore this world a little bit more too. I think it would be a cool idea.
Yeah.
I mean, this is popular. Just yesterday, as of us recording this, a new like spin-off comic came out. I think, what is it called? Last Ronin something something.
Oh, I don't. I could look it up.
I think it fills in the gaps of Michelangelo's like journey in Japan.
Oh, okay.
I didn't go to the comic book shop yesterday, so I didn't read it. But yeah, it is becoming more popular. So it would be cool if they did, you know, explore more of this world.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's just I actually kind of want to know more about like when the turtles actually fell and what was going on there. It's this weird kind of cyberpunk world when they get ambushed. You know, it kind of reminds me of this like role-playing game called Shadowrun. They kind of look like they're from that. It's called the one that you're talking about now. It's called The Last Ronin, The Lost Years.
The Lost Years. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, just yeah,
Michelangelo
you're right.
Just drunk.
Just drunk, wishing to die. Yeah, it's pretty bleak. Yeah.
I used to have brothers.
No, but I mean, this was a big hit, and like Brian absolutely loved it. He kept begging me to read it, and I'm glad I came on here because I finally got a chance to read it.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear his opinion on it. This was fun, and I do want to read more IDW. I've actually wanted to because when like. I shouldn't say news because it's only news if you're a nerd, but when the quote unquote news broke that there was a new fifth turtle, Jenica, that's right. A female and has the yellow mask and was a human that turned into a turtle. I remember people being like, oh, this is really cool. And I was like, oh, I want to read like that whole arc. I want to read everything about that character. Yeah. So what's your favorite version of the turtles?
That's a really good question. I think that like maybe early on in the IDW comic continuity, I think that's probably my favorite because it's like this nice blend of like it's kind of goofy. Their personalities all kind of match up with what they were like in the cartoon from when we were kids. And the artwork is good, but it's very serious. Like one thing with that IDW continuity is there's this whole like mythology to it. Mm. And like the Rat King, for example, is like a kind of like Asian god character.
Uh-huh.
Right. You know, he's not like that weird guy that lived in the sewers.
Yeah.
In the cartoon. So I like that version. I also like the Nickelodeon cartoon version. And I like the live action original film version too. With like Sam Rockwell in it.
Yes, you know? Yes, right. I would say for sure for me it's the first live action film. Absolutely. I think it's an amazing film. I think it's actually underrated as a movie. Yes. Even when people talk about comic book movies, it's like it should be more highly rated. It's gritty. Its vision of New York is very, very good. It's got a great structure. It's a very good movie. And they actually did a good job in that movie of blending like comedy with like kind of a grittiness that felt like when that movie was first made and they screened it, the producers of the cartoon are like, what did you do? Like, you're going to ruin the whole franchise.
Right.
And the figures only sold more. So it didn't ruin it, but it did expand it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would definitely be mine. But you know, like I said, I do like Rise. I do like that, that TMNT one that no one talks about. The one that I feel like everyone considers, we all agree is the absolute worst is the Next Mutation, which was by, Saban. Who did Power Rangers, and it basically was like Power Rangers with turtles. It was live action, but like really shitty suits, like not as good as the movies. And it wasn't funny. It was just pretty shitty.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the worst version. And they actually do cross over with the Power Rangers at one point too.
Yes, of course. Why not?
Yeah. And with IDW Comics, there actually is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Power Rangers crossover too.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, Pete, thank you so much for being here. I loved reading this. I love talking to you about bullshit. Tell us about what's going on in your channels and your world.
Yeah, sure. So I have two channels. I have Comic Books Transformed, where all the kind of shit I talked about today with Mike, I talk about my friend Brian. It's on YouTube. It's on wherever you might find a podcast. We talk about adaptations of comic books into movies and streaming shows. Then the other channel I'm on is called The Lasser Cast, where me and my friend Danny review current horror movies from all different decades. And I also get a chance to interview horror writers.
Mm-hmm,
and speaking of which, horror writers, I myself actually have a book coming out in July called There's No Way This Can Be Right. And it's on my page, my Facebook author page. So you can just look up PR Marsh author page on Facebook and you can find me. I could definitely use some more followers. I'm just starting this whole thing. Yeah.
But well, I didn't know that you had a book coming out. That's very exciting. I can't wait to read it. Well, you got to come back and we'll talk about it when you put it out.
Yeah, dude, I would love to. I'd love to. I'll definitely send you a copy too.
Awesome. Awesome.
Awesome.
All right. This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday without fail. We're going to hit 300 episodes this year, which is, this might be the longest commitment I've ever had in my life.
That is awesome, man.
We end every episode by saying go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.